Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Andrew Doman, and I'm just chairing this presentation for Peter and Sharon. So we're going through WorkCover South Australia and WorkCover Queensland scheme updates. So we'll probably try to stick to 15 minutes each, and then so we can have a good 10 minutes of question time afterwards. So I'll probably just start off reading the bios, and then I'll hand over to Peter to start with WorkCover South Australia. So Peter's currently Director of Reporting and Business Systems at WorkCover South Australia. The majority of his career has been in workers' compensation, having previously responsibilities for vocational rehabilitation, operational management of outsourced claims arrangements, and the actuarial team for WorkCover South Australia. He was also the claims lead for one of the largest IT projects in South Australia, replacing WorkCover's claims and premium management system in 2010. Prior to his role at WorkCover South Australia, he held senior analytical roles in workers' compensation for QBE and the state government. And introducing Sharon Stratford from WorkCover Queensland. Stratford. Did I get that right now? So Sharon has over 10 years senior management experience with WorkCover Queensland, the monopoly insurer in the state, where she is currently the general manager of customer services. She's worked in the workers' compensation industry for over 20 years, starting as a physiotherapist, providing return-to-work services. Sharon is also has management and business systems qualifications. Her background and experience support her to achieve optimal outcomes for injured workers at the lowest cost for employers. She's committed to ensuring delivery of high-quality claims, injury and relationship management services to WorkCover's customers across the state. Sharon is Queensland's representative on the head of workers' compensation authorities and was a Personal Injury Education Foundation board member, that was a hard one to say, for 3 years. In her spare time, she flies to France as often as she can, as Sharon loves all things French. Okay, Peter, take it away.
Okay, thanks everyone. How are you going after lunch? This is always the session where people start to fade, so I'll be quick. So I'm just going to give you an overview of South Australia, talk about our results at 30 June, and then some initiatives that we've got underway to improve our performance. Because as you would have heard this morning, South Australia's buggered, according to our minister. Thanks for putting that out there. So SA, look, we're a high-cost scheme. We have been for a while. To put that in perspective, everything's relative, high and low. So our average premium rate's 2.75, compared to 1.298 in Victoria, 1.68 in New South Wales for 12-13, and the rumour is that it'll be around 1.4 for this year. So we're costing employers probably twice as much as what it's costing in other states. And we have no caps on our entitlements. We are a long-tail scheme. We have high disputation and lower return-to-work rates when you compare them on the national scale. Prevention for us is managed separately via Safe Work South Australia, a separate entity that was split out back in 2005. And in the last couple of years, we've had a few things happen. So a new board was announced recently, commencing 1 November. And that's a change for us from a board that was more representative of industry representatives to one that's a little bit more commercial, going down from 10 members to 7. A new management team was put in place from February. So Greg McCarthy's our CEO that came from New South Wales. We've also had a couple of GMs come in from QCOMP and an enhanced sort of organisational restructure internally as well. As you can imagine, we've got clear ministerial expectations of performance. He's put out a performance statement, a performance charter, which have both been published and set out for everyone to see. And what he's announced there is a two-stage review. Stage one being a focus on early intervention, supporting businesses in the first few weeks of claims management, and a commercial board. Stage two being what he calls a root and branch recasting of the scheme, which will consider its foundational characteristics. So that's code for anticipate some legislative reform package coming in the next little while. And we're leading up, obviously, to a state election in March next year as well. The premium for us is managed in-house, and we put in place a new experience-rated premium system for 12-13. So we've been a little bit busy of late with hindsight premium calculations and employers starting to understand the mysteries of the new system. Our claims and legal are outsourced, so we had new arrangements start 1 January. Prior to that, for the last many years, since 2006, we've had Employers Mutual as our sole external claims agent. And now we've got two with 50-50 market split, being Employers Mutual and Gallagher Bassett. New legal arrangements are put in place as well. So we've had a sole legal provider since around 2005. And now we have two legal providers, being Minter Ellison and Spark Hillmore. And there's been a lot of chat this morning about common law, but it's not a feature in SA at all. So by the numbers, 50,000 registered employers covering about 500,000 workers, and about 35% of the state workforce is self-insured in South Australia. So that's significant for us in terms of the employers that are left. There's about 66 private self-insurers, and about 20% of that, 20% of the scheme is Crown. So what we've got left, I'll show you in a minute. General claim numbers each year, about $650 million we collect in premium, $420 million in claims costs, the majority of which is income maintenance at about $230 million, and $125 we spend in scheme expenses. And we've got pretty good investment returns. So over the longer term, we've consistently outperformed many of the larger funds. So to give you a picture of our employers, so what this pie chart shows you is in the darker teal colour is claims costs, and in the lighter sort of brownie colour is the number of employers. So this has changed a little bit since we did it, but the key take home there is small employers are about 91% of our employers by number, contribute about 25% of claims costs. And to provide some context for the strategies I'm going to show you later, they're likely to have a claim every 14 years. So they're not really going to know what to do when that claim comes in. Medium employers, about 56% of claims costs. It's now moved to about 10% of employers, so we've got about 5,000 employers there. And then in the large end of town, 0.3%, which is about 160, 170 employers, contributing to about 20% of claims costs. Indicative cost of claims over time. So this looks different for all schemes, obviously. But of the roughly 18,000 claims that we got in, and this was based on 11-12 numbers, about 75% of those are less than 2 weeks on medical-only claims. So as the flow goes through, about half of our claims that we receive lose time from work, and then half of those are continuing on past 2 weeks. Okay. So 75% of our claims contribute 4% of our costs, not really the area that we're going to focus on. Where we have a problem is claims going past 6 months, where you can see that although it's only about 10% of claims, they're contributing over 80% of costs into the scheme. Illustrating before why we're a high-cost scheme, because we have claims going on for a long time. New claim trends over time, and this is not dissimilar to some of the other schemes, but there's a clear reduction in total claims incurred and claim incidents over time. And there's been lots of reasons for those sort of things in the early days, including some ledger reform, such as removing journey claims and those sort of things. But over the longer term, there's been a clear reduction. What hasn't changed is the green line, which is the number of claims going past 10 days. Okay. So what we've seen is the sort of lower cost, smaller claims haven't been reported, but the claims that are substantial for us and that cost us money are hanging around, are still coming in and hanging around as well. And this is just what I mentioned earlier. A few of the other schemes have put this up, maybe for better news than us. This is part of the National Headline Measures Report, which replaces the Campbell's Return to Work Monitor. And you can see South Australia, excluding SeaCare, are the lowest of those schemes in the number of workers working back at work in a paid job at 7 to 9 months. Okay. So our results at 30 June, our scheme funding is 63.7%. It's sort of hovered around the 55 to 65 mark for the last 5 or 6 years. And what that means for us is our outstanding claims liability carries with it about $1.4 billion of unfunding. In 2012-13, we got about 17,000 claims for our work cover insured employers, so this is excluding the self-insurance. About 5,000 of those we anticipate to lose more than 10 days. And 2,309 claim disputes. So I went to a presentation earlier with WA, and their dispute numbers are about half for a similar sort of size claim incidents. Our investment return last year was excellent, 13.1%, and our sort of long-term rates are probably around the 8% mark, depending on which time band you take. The real trouble for us are these bottom 2 points. And that is that the 2012-13 hindsight rate at 30 June 13 was just under 3.3%, which is a little bit different to the premium that we're charging of 2.75. And As it stands today, the current forward break-even premium rate is in excess of 3.3%. So what that's saying is not only do we have the highest premium rate, but we probably should be charging more than what we're charging now. Okay. Now, if you take some of the economic conditions that, again, people have spoken about today out of that, then maybe it comes down to 3.05, 3%. Andrew's pointing his finger up, so it could be higher. 3.1. But it's certainly not 2.75 is the message, depending on which way you look at it. So what's in our liabilities? This is really just for information. The bulk of our liabilities in income maintenance and medical, and the rest of it is quite small. And the distribution of our liabilities, you can see about 50% odd in the most recent three and a half years, but we still have a significant liability in our tail. And looking at that over the longer term, what this shows, in the black line is the actual premium rate that we've charged as a percentage of payroll, and the top height of those bars shows what the anticipated break-even premium rate is for those years. So the worrying trend for us is if you look at 2010 to 2013, you can clearly see that there's an upward trend. Okay, and correlating that back to the earlier graph showing that we've had less claim incidents and about the same sort of time loss claims can only mean two things. The claims are costing more, or they're going on longer and they're costing more. And so what we're seeing is the claims continuing into the older durations are the ones that are really impacting us in this space. And we've had a little bit of movement in our longer tail where the cost of those claims has gone up a little bit as well. So what are we doing about it? We've got a few initiatives on the go at the moment, and we anticipate all of these will help us solve the problem that you can see here, because we actually have two things to deal with. One is we want to claw back some of the unfunded liability, and the second one is we want to make sure the scheme's operating at a cost base that's similar to what we're charging in premium. So what we've got on the go at the moment, WorkCover Assist is something that we've recently launched, and as part of that there's a free advisory service being offered by the Legal Services Commission in South Australia as well. And what this is an area that injured workers, employers and the public can call in, and as part of that they can ask about their claim, ask about their premium, and if necessary report fraud or any of those sort of activities. We've got an early intervention program with employer workplace visits for small employers. So you recall earlier that I was saying that a small employer only has a claim every 14 years and they don't know what to do. So what we're doing is we're going out there. We've trained staff within the two claims agents, and they're actually going out and visiting employers and helping them through this process in the early days. And a similar sort of parallel was drawn with your home and contents insurance or commercial insurance. If you break a machine or you break a window, someone's out there assessing that pretty quickly. And workers' comp seems to be very different to that, so we're changing that mentality to say employers are paying us a premium for an insurance type product. We're going to go out there and offer that level of service. We're also putting in place a separate psych strategy on top of that, so we'll have a different strategy for employers who've got psych claims. And in country and rural and regional areas, we're actually going to offer this service to all employers, not just the small employers as well. Rehab return to work coordinators, we're starting to leverage those a little bit more. One of the things that the Minister was keen to see us do is put return to work plans in place within 4 weeks. At the moment, our legislation says that you must do it within 13, but we're certainly trying to bring that earlier and have more engagement with the workplace, with the return to work coordinator, and really empower those employers to take ownership of that return to work. Improve focus on work capacity review. So we've got two problems here. One is the claims that have already gone past the work capacity review, and that was prior to when we put the legislation in, and also those that have slipped through. And the other one is those reaching that milestone point. So we've got very similar legislation to Victoria in that sense, and for those of you that are familiar with that scheme, you'll see the work that Len's done in turning that around over the years. We're hopeful that we'll be able to do something similar in SA. So we've got two projects, one to look at those existing and one to look at the work capacity reviews as they come due. And the pleasing thing is that for September 2013, we did 99% of those on time. Okay, and that's from almost zero at the beginning of the calendar year as we went through transition to new agents and those sort of things. We've put a revised claims agent KPI pack in place, and that's really to focus claims agents on the outcomes that we're trying to achieve. And as part of that, we've got a more active management strategy with our claims agent, and we're getting more hands-on. Schemes tend to go through cycles of contract management and then more active management and then back to contract management. So now we're in the active management space. In terms of reporting, scheme analytics and data mining, again, there's been a few presentations about that today, particularly about data that people have that they're not using. My team in particular are starting to look at this a lot more. We're a very data-rich scheme. We manage a central system. So we have pretty good quality data, and it's consistent with both of our claims agents. So we're certainly beefing up our data analytics, data mining, and using it for all sorts of things, lead indicators, as well as our sort of detective and fraud controls. Increasing fraud and investigation activity, we're doing that as well. We're starting to get out there a bit more just to try and change some of the culture and perceptions about that in our scheme. Enhanced outcome-focused VOC rehab model. Alan, I see Alan sitting in the room. We implemented some stuff as a result of his review back in 2005, 2006. This is further to that work. We're enhancing it and relaunching a different rehab model. So at the moment, for pre-injury employers, we've lodged a new model, pre-injury employer services, and essentially what we're doing is we're time boxing and capping the delivery of those services to fixed durations so that they can't be refer out and the services just go on forever and there's no outcomes. For different employer services, we'll be doing that early next year. And the other thing I didn't mention up there is we've also starting to look at site claims. It's pretty prevalent at the moment as an issue, and it's something we want to get on top of before it becomes too big in our scheme. And the last point there is the remissions and supplementary payment scheme. This is part of our premium system and allows us to either provide remissions or make employers pay supplementary payments as a result of lack of return to work and those sort of things. So that's just starting up as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Hello, everyone. I'm not sure if you've had any other Queensland presenters this morning or not, but in case you haven't, welcome to Queensland. It's a nice place to be. Huh? For you all going out for lunch before. Have you enjoyed all the sunshine out there? So for the scheme update, I'm going to talk about our financial position, give you some statistics and talk about our outcomes. And as probably a lot of you know, we've had a review in our scheme recently. We've had some legislative changes, so I'll talk about those and some of the things we're doing with our employers. So financially, we had a good year last year, so we got more premium income in than we were expecting, and our claims costs were less, so we also had a very good investment return as well, as others did too. So for the year, we ended up having a $500 million profit, which was very good, and it helped to build up our reserves. So we're sitting with quite a nice level of solvency at the moment, which is excellent. In terms of statistics, sorry, I ended up following South Australia last time as well, and I just feel awful putting our premium rate up, although... I know, it's not as low as it used to be. So there are other, there's one other scheme that's obviously lower than us at the moment, but when you see our scheme review and our outcomes of our legislative change, that might change very soon. So as you can see, in 2009 and 10, our premium rate was the lowest in Australia, so it was $1.15. Then we had some pressure around common law in our system, and our premium rate has gone up since. But the pleasing thing is there were some changes introduced in 2010 that at least plateaued that off for us. Some changes that have just come in that I'll outline later, we'll see our premium rate drop again. So we're yet to do our analysis yet. Hey, Lisa. Yeah. So we'll have that done in a couple of months' time, but some of the figures that the MPs were throwing around in Parliament is that our premium rate will decrease by about 12 to 15%. So that's the figure you need to come up with, Lisa, obviously, when you do it. Done, for you. Those politicians are very clever people. In terms of our scheme payments, you see over the matches obviously with the premium rate going up. So our scheme payments went up mostly around common law for a couple of years there, but they've levelled off. And such your claim numbers, like a lot of schemes, are dropping slightly, which is good. And our scheme, for those of you who aren't aware of our scheme, very much a common law lump sum scheme, so our weekly benefits are very short tail, although it's obviously the trend with New South Wales moving closer to that as well. So probably a thing to talk about our statute claim payments, that in the last year or two we have had a bit of pressure around our weekly benefits, but it seems to be sorting itself out now at the moment. So common law, that's probably the most interesting thing in terms of claim numbers in our scheme, and it probably would have been better to have a much longer look at this. But I just pulled these stats out of the regulator's statistics for the scheme for the year. So our common law claims over the last couple of years, after increasing there for a bit, have levelled off, which is very good, and could be a whole heap of reasons for that, but one of the things that it's been put down to are the scheme changes in 2010. That had put some control around common law. There was also the threat that if they didn't stabilise off, that some dramatic changes would have to happen. So I'm not sure how much plaintiff lawyers can control their behaviour, but maybe there's a bit of that in there as well. I guess if I had have drawn back the previous 10 years before that graph, our common law claim numbers, and how you can see those numbers, but for the scheme, they're just over 4,000 at the moment, a year that we get in. So for 10 years before that, there were around 2,500 common law claims that we had. So you can see that increase in common law claim numbers responsible for the increase in the premium rate and for our scheme payments as well. But things are coming to fix that. The changes that did happen in 2010 did help stabilise the numbers, but it also helped to drop down average damages as well. So average damages has come down about 20 or 30,000. So a few things probably related to that. One were the scheme changes that introduced controls around general damages, so scale around general damages. We also put a lot of focus from 2010 on our claims management framework, working with stakeholders and with lawyers to come up with an agreed claims protocol. So now, in terms of common law, we go in early with our best offer, and that seems to work quite well for us to reduce damages down by about at least 10, 20,000. The other thing is that there's still a lot of small claims in our scheme. So in terms of common law, up until the 17th of October, we had unlimited access to common law, which is why we had so many common law claims. So we'll come probably to scheme changes, which will explain a lot of that. But what was still in those average damages are a lot of small end claims. So that helped to bring the average down as well. What I like talking about is our return to work outcomes. And Mary, are you watching these ones? Yeah, okay. These stats are from the scheme's regulator. So in our scheme, WorkCover is a monopoly insurer, as we said earlier. So we have about 90% of claims with us. We represent 90% of the workforce. So the rest of the scheme is made up of self-insurers. So these are scheme statistics, so they include self-insurers' figures as well, but I'll point out some of ours shortly. So in terms of return to work, for a long time we've measured return to work, and a lot of the other schemes put up the figures from the surveys, but we measure every claim, and we have a lot of claims. You would have seen from the slide before, we have over 90,000 claims a year, which when you compare to some of the other stats that are put out there, seems like a lot more, but we measure and record all claims. So any claims, medical expense only, and time lost from day one, we record. So the outcomes that we record for return to work are from all of those claims. I guess the pleasing thing for me, we put a lot of effort over the last 3 years or so in terms of return to work and improving those outcomes. So for all the claims, those first four categories up there, they say fit for work, but it's really those claims that go back to work at the end of their claim. So we're looking there that most people go back to return to work with the same employer in their same job. So that's 93.4%. If you looked at the same figures a year or two beforehand, that was less than 90%. So we're really proud of that increase in our return to work outcomes for our claims. And obviously some of the bottom categories where people aren't fit for work, didn't go back to work, didn't have a job, have dropped right off, which is very pleasing. In terms of WorkCover Queensland, we also measure now a few other elements of return to work. So it's not just the outcome at the end of the claim. Obviously, there's a lot of things that impact on that. You were talking earlier, Peter, about having early return to work programs. So everything that happens early, and you've got the health benefits of work saying early is the best thing to do. So we measure those early indicators now as well. So we start with stay at work. Because we can measure all claims, we measure how many of those actually stayed at work after their injury. And we've had a focus on that last year, and we increased that return to work. We're working with our employers, and I'll talk about that in a sec. So we increased the percentage of workers that stay at work from 47.5% to over 50%, which is obviously much better because, as we know, the sooner people go off, the harder it is to get them back again to work. We're also measuring how long it takes before a person who does go off work takes to go back to work. So we call that our first return to work rate. So obviously what we've been trying to do is get people back to work sooner. So pleasingly, that's reduced down from 40 days to 37 days for all those claims that we case manage. We case manage about a third of the claims that come in. And that return to work rate, I'll just throw it up again. So it went from 90% to over 95% over the last couple of years. So in terms of our scheme review, we've been under review for quite some time, it seems, but there's an end finally for us. So there was a legislative scheme review that commenced in June 2002. When we had the last sort of legislative changes in 2010, one of the things that was put in is there must be a scheme review in our scheme to be completed by the 30th of June 2013. So the review started back in 2012 and it was conducted by a parliamentary committee. So it was made up of both sides of Parliament. We only have seven, I think, opposition members in Queensland, so I think we had two represented on this committee. And they received a lot of stakeholder submissions, so almost 250 submissions, and then the report came down on the 23rd of May. It was supposed to come down in February, but they needed a bit more time to go through all the submissions. The review itself did came out and said things in Queensland are going pretty well, there's no need to change a lot. There were some minor changes around definition of worker and psych that were suggested and return to work, a few little things for return to work coordinators. But essentially the main elements of the scheme, and that's what a lot of stakeholder submissions were about. If you look at those 250, about half were made up of employer and industry submissions. The other half were made up of union and lawyer, mostly, submissions on the other side, because obviously common law, you can work it out a whole different ways. We don't know how much the law is actually cost in our scheme, because for lower end injuries up until now we don't pay any plaintiff lawyer costs, so we're only kind of guessing, but a rough guess would probably be about a $200 million industry in Queensland. So we'll see if the lawyers are quite interested in what would happen with it. And there are a few worker actual submissions as well. There were standard letters that I'm not sure who drafted for them, but they were put in as well. So there's a lot of submissions to go through. And because I guess I can kind of understand why the Parliamentary Committee came out like that, because you've got half of the submissions that you've got on one side going, like, everything's fantastic, don't change anything. Employers are obviously not saying that, but, you know, it's kind of a balance between the two. So the committee thought things were going fine and nothing needed to change. Government or the Attorney or Cabinet didn't necessarily think that was the case, so there were some legislative changes introduced. So the committee came out with 32 recommendations, and 18 of those were to support the recommendations that were in the committee, and those things where they were legislated. There were two that were modified, and the other 12 were not agreed with and changed. So I guess the main thing, the first one there was came in first, so it came in July this year. It was a change to the definition of worker. It was different to what the committee recommended. Our definition of worker now aligns with the ATO. We haven't seen a lot of change with that yet in terms of claim numbers or claims that are rejected or too much change in premium either, but it's a bit hard to tell, so we'll wait and see. But it is much easier for employers, so instead of us trying to give them a big definition manual or what the definition is, we just simply send them to the ATO tool that takes a series of questions and you go through it and they answer it and they come up with an answer at the end that says if they're a worker or not. So it's very good for employers. So the legislative changes that were passed on the 17th of October, we now have for new injuries a whole person impairment threshold for common law for any injuries that are greater than 5%. And what we're using to assess that, our old table of injuries that we had that was kind of based on impairment but not on whole person impairment. So we've now adopted the nationally consistent guide, which is essentially New South Wales's guide to assess the whole person impairment to determine thresholds. So that's when I was talking earlier about the premium rate should be going down. That's going to be the main thing that contributes to it. So estimates are that out of our 4,000 claims, at least 50% of those will drop out in terms of common law. So average cost of just under 150 makes a big difference to premium rate and to the amount of claims that we'll be paying out. So a few other changes as well. Our definition for site claims has changed to the major significant contributing factor. There's also a provision in legislation that we can reject claims if the employer, before they employed that worker, asked the worker to declare all of their pre-existing conditions and injuries, and if they failed to disclose one that they end up having a claim for, then we can reject that claim. I guess one of the other major scheme fundamental changes is we used to have three entities in Queensland that were involved with workers' comp. There was us, there was QComp, who was the regulator of us and the self-insurers, and then the department that did the workers' comp policy and also looked after health and safety. So now what's happened, and this is similar to a lot of other organisations in Queensland and government since Campbell Newman's been looking at rationalising. So QComp and the regulatory functions that go with QComp now sit as part of the department. So there's just two entities now in Queensland. There's us and the regulator, which is another department. We also have to, for common law claims now, insurers, whereas before it was QComp's Return to Work Assist program that used to be more involved with this, insurers now have to provide a Return to Work program for common law claims because the Return to Work Assist doesn't exist anymore as part of QComp. And we used to be able to prosecute claims for where there was fraud involved, so that's gone to the regulator as well. In terms of, we're trying to do a lot of work with our employers and really focus them on the things that they need to be focused on, which will help them reduce their premium with EBR, obviously. One of the things that employers have found really helpful, and we found really helpful to have it to talk to employers about, is having online information for them. So out of our 150,000 employers, about 10,000 employers have registered for Employer Online, those that have a reasonable number of claims. And the stats that are put up in South Australia are similar. There's a smaller number, small percentage of employers that have a large number of claims. So they're mostly the ones we've got registered. And there's a whole heap of statistics in there. I've just pulled out a few, and I guess these are some that we focus on with employers. So there's a whole range of claims indicators there. The blue line is that employer's own information, and the orange line is how they compare to the industry. For the last couple of years, we've aligned all of our claims management by industry now, and we're finding a lot of benefits around that because different industries have different trends, and there's things, industry-specific things you can do with that industry to try and get change with them. So we look at claims. The three I pulled there are the three I talked about earlier. So the average first return to work days is the second one on the top right there. And then we also have information on the final return to work for them and also how many of their claims are staying at work too. So we not only look at return to work for ourselves and how we're going, but we try and really work with employers and explain to them the benefits of return to work and the influence that can have on their claims and on their premium. Just recently we introduced a little body band so that employers could see where they're having the injuries, and we've got some industry comparisons with that as well. So employers, we've got a lot of positive feedback from employers about that sort of information that we're giving them that really helps them and ultimately will help us too. So that's all from me. I thought I'd remind you about what's outside. You can't really see it now. And the other reason I put that up, one of the other benefits of being industry aligned for us is it matches in with the government's industry focus. So the government's got four pillar industries in Queensland. One of them's tourism. So there you go. And you're all here being part of it, which is lovely. And the other pillar industries are mining and construction and agricultural and rural. So on behalf of we're covering the scheme and Queensland government, welcome to Queensland, and hope you enjoy the rest of your time here. So if you think today is beautiful, tomorrow is going to be perfect, because that's our slogan, and it'll be perfect for me too, because I won't have to present tomorrow. I can come to the conference tomorrow and just enjoy it and chat with people. So I think we've got a few minutes for questions now. If not, I can talk tomorrow as well.
Thanks, Sharon. And thanks to Peter as well. Does anyone have any questions? Want to step up to the plate?
You're nicely positioned there, Alan. I noticed right next to the microphone. Is that where you sit in all of the sessions?
strategic placement. Question to Peter. In relation to your remission and supplementary payment scheme, what learnings have you taken from the former bonus and penalty scheme, and in particular, do you exclude secondary disability in the calculation for the supplementary payment?
The supplementary payment scheme just started, so we're just in the early phases of that. And I assume as part of setting that up, they would have gone to the levy adjustment scheme, which we used to have, and taken some learnings from that. But it's involved more in, an additional sort of payment or fine, using the wrong word, but just to illustrate the point, on top of the premium rather than part of that calculation itself. So in our premium calculation that we do, secondaries are excluded. Did that answer your question?
I've got a question for Sharon. I promised I'd ask at least one curly question.
You should know what the answer is, Liz. What question could you ask?
I don't know this yet. I'm interested in about particularly the reforms and how they've the prior injuries component when you start with an employer, and what that's going to do to the chances of people gaining employment when they've already been injured. Do you have any views or comments?
Yeah, so this is the pre-employment disclosure. Yeah, we just want to work through how it will work as well. And I must talk to Victoria while I'm here. Is anyone from Victoria in the room? Oh, I'll talk to you afterwards. Because I understand you've got a similar provision in your legislation that we copied.
Sure.
Mary's nodding, yes. So you do, obviously. But probably the reason that you don't know much about it, because the feedback that we got, that unless employers follow the exact instructions that they need to follow, and they need to think about this, like, you know, when they're employing, before they've employed people, and if they haven't done every single, like, you know, thing right, then it's very difficult to reject the claim. So we know that we're going to get a lot of pressure from employers around it. So, you know, they've seen it. The other part that I didn't mention that links in is that employers can now get their claims history. So any potential workers that they're looking to put on, they can come and get their full claims history that wasn't available to them over the last few years. So, and I guess one of the things that employers, the issues employers always have is, you know, they had that injury before they came to see me, it's not my fault, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess we've got to work through, you know, really how much impact it will have and balance that with employers' expectations of wanting to knock all these claims out too. So, yeah, we're still working through how we're going to implement it too.
Any other questions? We still have 5 minutes. All right. I'll ask one. Promise it wasn't one that was slipped to me. So, Sharon, you mentioned a bit about psych claims, and that's definitely something that's plagued other schemes as well. I just want to go into a bit of detail about that. Can you just explain what the issue was and what you've done to try and rectify it?
Yeah, so you're talking about legislative change? Yeah, so the legislative change, at present, all of our injuries have to be a significant contributing factor. So the legislative change is to make it, instead of a significant, V major. So there's a lot of debate around about how much impact that will actually have. When we look at it, I guess, and it must be the same with all schemes, that in our legislation, most claims don't fall out because our rejection rate is similar to other schemes. We reject about 60% of psych claims, and the reason that most of them are rejected is because of reasonable management action. So A or, you know, V major will have an impact on some conditions. So those psych claims where there may be multiple factors going on with them. So, you know, their wife might have left them, you know, the recent family member died, and there's a whole heap of factors going on in their life. That might be one of the cases that we might be able to reject on, but I guess we're not saying that there will be a huge impact because most of it hinges around reasonable management action and what the employer has done. But still, there will be some that are knocked out. And again, it's managing expectations because a lot of changes in there for employers. And when the changes were introduced, that was the main focus that was put on it. We're trying to help industry and help employment in Queensland by bringing in a lot of assistance for employers to reduce their premium down. So there'll be a lot of expectations from employers because the common law they won't see for a couple of years, because coaches injury year, a lot of expectations around the statutory side and how we'll be able to, how we manage that, and you know, employers will be looking for us to reject more claims, but whether we can, we're going to have to get a lot more medical input up front, whereas right now we're trying to make our decisions on site claims within 4 weeks. We have to get an IME to determine whether it's, you know, under the major or not. We'll add a bit more time for claims too, which is not going to help return to work in the long term either. So I guess it's managing expectations of employers around that as well.
Any other questions?
Andrew Holtram, Taylor Fry, Consulting Actuaries. This is possibly a question for somebody that's not in the room, but...
it's going to be a hard one to answer.
Which is more than likely to do with the regulator, who doesn't seem to be represented at the conference. As an advisor to...
Chris, I think you can answer it.
Very good.
I didn't see you on the list either, Chris, so...
As an advisor to self-insurers, one of the things that I find it useful to be able to do is to access either the data or the reports that are written, the actuarial reports that are written for each of the schemes. It's fantastic background to have, and the advice that you can give a self-insurer is very much better informed for having been able to read through the scheme report. For a while, New South Wales used to publish it as a matter of course, but for all jurisdictions except Queensland, it's possible to access the scheme report through a Freedom of Information or equivalent request. In the state of Queensland, for reasons that I don't understand, there seems to be an attitude that the scheme, we call it the scheme, but it's really WorkCover Queensland, is in competition with the self-insurers, and as such, the scheme valuation report is protected from Freedom of Information requests. I know I'm not the only advisor to self-insurers that's tried to go down the route of accessing the scheme valuation report. I'm not sure how to turn this into a question, but it's more of a statement that I think that it would be better for the scheme more generally if the advice to self-insurers could be improved. And one way it could be improved is wider access to the scheme report, particularly in the current circumstances where we've got significant reforms.
I'm happy to take that on unless you want to have an answer immediately, Chris, but it might be a little hard for Chris given the new regulator who's just been set up, but I'm happy to pass that on to them. And certainly over the last couple... We've had that criticism before, obviously, and certainly over the last couple of years we've tried to be a lot more open. So Lisa and the scheme actuary every 6 months do presentation for stakeholders, mostly lawyers in the room, but interested in stakeholders and what's happened with the scheme. So I've certainly been a lot more open in, on that side of things. I don't know if you want to make a comment or not, Lisa, but... You know, yeah, well, the self-insurers come along to those presentations and they get a copy of the presentations afterwards too. But I understand you want the, you know, technical actuarial detail that surrounds it. But I'm happy to pass it on to the new regulator for you.
Okay. Can everyone thank Sharon and Peter? The round of applause.